Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 18th, 2007, and this is show number 122. Well, hey, did you think it was pretty cool to get an extra episode yesterday? Kind of wild, kind of crazy. I thought it was fun. Had a good time with Victor, and I just had too much content to fit it into last week or this week. We got a lot of fun in the show today, so let's dig right in. Michael from Ambrosia Software was very amused to hear my review from last week of Wiretap Studio when I explained that I couldn't figure out how to exactly apply the special effects that they had in there. He very patiently encouraged me to go over and watch their little videos on their website. Well, I had watched their videos. What was he talking about? So I went over there and I checked it out, and sure enough, I had watched like the first row of videos, but there were like 16 more of them. So I went back and watched all of them. They do a great job because instead of giving you one big, long, globby, you know, 28-minute video screencast where you got to pay attention that long, instead they break it up into each of the little different things that you can do with Wiretap Studio. So it's really easy to follow. I like that. And of course, what I discovered in watching the videos was you don't actually so much apply the special effects as they simply are. Let me explain that a little better. Let's say I've got my interview up with Victor, and I can see me on track one and him on track two. Well, I push the special effects button, and it asks me which of the two tracks I want to apply it to. And of course, Victor's voice sounded fantastic, and mine sounded icky. So I clicked it for me, and then I said, all right, I want to apply a graphics equalizer. Well, as soon as that graphics equalizer was on, it was on. It was set for my entire recording. So I was able to hit play and then start adjusting the little volume sliders, bringing up the bass to make my sound a little bit richer, and it happened automatically real time. So it's kind of funny. It's because it was too easy that I actually didn't figure out how to use it. You will recall I said I could have gone back and read the manual, but I wasn't ever going to do that. So luckily they did have the videos for me. Michael did also want me to make sure I pointed out that any of these effects that you do to it are lossless, meaning you can always get back to your original source material. You can stack different effects on top of each other, erase the first effect you did, and the following three take effect. You can change formats. It doesn't matter what you do to it. You always have your original source material and can back up. So it makes it real fun to play around with because you don't feel like, ooh, I might break it. So anyway, that's the end of that. And I wanted to make sure I did make that little point that Wiretap Studio is even more powerful than I thought. Well, I can't thank you enough for all the fantastic reviews you've been doing on iTunes. I had no idea this would work so well. My objective in asking you for the reviews was not to stroke my ego, but that's kind of a nice side effect. I do like that part. But to try to raise the No Silicast in the top 10 kind of numbers, those kind of things at iTunes. It turns out because of the reviews you've been putting in there, the No Silicast is now number 23 in the featured list of how-to tech podcasts. I wasn't even on the list before. Well, the first page is It's 21 podcasts on the first page. So technically, we're still on the second page. It'd be great if we could get on the first page, wouldn't it? Well, I should tell you, though, that we are ahead of Business Week's Tech 101. Marie wrote in a very constructive review, not all wine and roses, but useful. Here's what she wrote. If you hear the host of this podcast as a guest on another podcast, or is going to be interviewed on a podcast, I highly recommend listening. She is absolutely fantastic when being interviewed. Her podcast, however, is too scripted to get 5 stars. If she would lose the script, be natural, and just talk about software, I would give it 5 stars for sure. Even though scripted, her content is really good, and I am a subscriber as a result. Well, I read that one to you because I actually kind of agree with Marie. I've listened to me being interviewed, and that's when I'm really relaxed and I just talk about whatever I want to talk about. Seems I can have a conversation with absolutely anyone about absolutely anything. I ask my kids, they hate it. I'm always just talking to random people in line and things like that. But it's hard to sit there with the mic alone and be animated and interesting. And I've tried it with like just doing bullet points so I don't read, and there's a whole lot of Well, that last Tuesday I was thinking this would be interesting, but now I can't think of anything. What was that again? So that doesn't really work for me. I'm working on it though. I'm going to keep working on this, and I guess I could do short little snippet reviews, but to do the level of in-depth information that I try to get off, I don't know how to do it without a script. The good news is if you go back and listen to my earliest shows when I was reading, it was really stilted. I was reading the script to you. So it is better, and I'm a work in progress, that's for sure, but I'm going to keep working on it. I appreciate the constructive feedback, Marie. From a different point of view, Congolia points out in a review that the best thing about the show is that the show notes are verbatim what I say in the podcast. Well, we can't really have it both ways now, can we? Well, another important thing to remember is that the script is there also because a lot of people prefer to, they prefer to learn by reading, not by listening. And to me, podcasting is all about what you want, when you want it, and how you want it. Well, if you'd rather just read, why am I going to make you listen to the podcast? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So who am I to deny those people? Oh, the conflict. I can't stand it. Script it. Don't script it. Script it. Don't script it. Ah, well, I'll do what I want. Congolia also says, her enthusiasm for freeware and shareware is addicting. I find myself downloading programs based on Allison's reviews. Isn't that nice? Well, Juju B says, Allison is a spunky podcaster. She has lots of tips and tricks to make my computer more useful, along with some tips and tricks that keep me entertained when I'm avoiding work. I like that. My only complaint is that there is only one NoSilicast a week. Hey, you got two NoSilicasts this week. It's a great week. Putpat says, I never miss the podcast. I always learn something, and I get a few laughs at the same time. What more could you ask for? I think one of my favorite things I've learned in reading these reviews is that you do like to hear a little bit of the goofiness in my life. That, all tech all the time might get kind of dull after a while. Can't do too much of it, of course, because it is a tech geek podcast. But evidently, the occasional story about pouring a glass of wine in my laptop or about how my husband left the ignition on all night and left me with a dead battery kind of livens things up. By the way, he still hasn't bought me any jewelry for that mishap. Well, anyway, if you haven't written a review yet and you'd like to, even constructive criticism is appreciated. So please head up onto iTunes and put in your 2 cents. I'd love it if we could collectively get the NoSilicast onto that front page of tech how-to podcasts. Do you drive a Honda or an Acura? If you don't, why not? I chose my first car as a 1976 Honda Civic, and I've never owned anything else. I know, closed-minded and narrow and all that, but if you find something you like, and it works virtually flawlessly for you, why wouldn't you stick with it? My cars have a really high resale value when I sell them, perhaps because of all the fantastic wax jobs on them, but perhaps because my mechanic, Honda Bob, keeps them in such fine working condition. For the cost of the recommended service, which I think of kind of like getting a yearly physical for yourself, Honda Bob makes sure things aren't wearing out, the belts and fluids all get changed so nothing fails on me, and I can drive without ever worrying about anything in my car falling apart. I had one Honda for 11 years that I think the only major part I had to have replaced was the water pump. So I think I paid a total of, $600 over 11 years for actual repairs, and everything else was just the regular service. That's pretty darn good. So if you do drive a Honda or an Acura, and you happen to live in the LA or Orange County areas where Honda Bob will drive to you, you'd be smart to have Honda Bob come over to your house and service your cars while you sit in your easy chair and relax. Give him a call at 562-531-2321. Or shoot him an email over at hdabob@aol.com. If you want to learn more about cars, check out his informative website at hdabob.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, I think I must be the last person on earth to check out appformac.com. Have you heard of it? Apparently everybody has but me. Well, let's back up a second and start with a problem statement. And then you'll see how I ended up at App for Mac. As perhaps you've heard, I had to do a full erase and install to get Leopard to behave a few weeks ago, which meant I had to reinstall every one of my applications. You might have also noticed that I do like an awful lot of applications, so this has been an effort not to be undertaken lightly. And on top of that, the extreme effort of tracking down all of my serial numbers for all of those applications. If you were to ask me on the street, for example, how do you organize your serial numbers for your applications? I would have assured you that I had quite a robust process that worked perfectly. I would have told you that when I register online, I always print the web page to PDF. I save it with a memorable name to my receipts folder. Then when the email arrives, confirming my serial number, I would save that in my receipts folder in my email. Well, now, depending on which email address I chose that day in which to register the application, it could either be in my public email address folder or my private email address folder, and then in receipts within that. Well, and then there's the times that I get an application through the archaic method of an actual piece of media in a box. Remember that? Well, in that case, the serial number is carefully folded and placed inside the CD sleeve, and then the CD is placed in my drawer full of CDs. Well, that is in case I chose on that particular day to cut it out and tape it in the notebook that I keep just for this purpose. Oh, and then sometimes I put it in the software application Keep It Together from reinventedsoftware.com. That's the other place I keep things. Well, I'm sure you can hear the confidence in my voice as I describe what felt to me like a responsible, repeatable method, and yet in reality it sounds more like I sprinkle serial numbers randomly about my house. Well, I've turned over a new leaf. Enter Rapido Serial from appformac.com. Rapido Serial is a universal binary piece of freeware, meaning it runs on both PowerPC and Intel-based Macs. Here's how delightfully it works. You launch Rapido Serial and give it a master password. This will be the password you use to open the application every time you launch. Across the top, you see five easy buttons: Preferences, Add, Remove, Export, and Print. Add is the obvious place to start. That brings up a window to add applications, either manually one at a time, or you can add all of your applications, or add another type of item. I was kind of chicken to fling all my applications in there to start with. That'd be kind of chaotic, I think. Maybe it would work. But I decided to start manually to add each of my applications each time I came across one for which I had to add my registration. Rapido Serial automatically picks up some information on its own from your applications. You know, things like the company name, the logo, the website, whatever it can glean from the application. Then you can enter a registration key, the name and email under which you registered the application, the serial number, and even any little random notes or other descriptions you'd like to add. You can even attach documents to an application, which would be a good place for me to put all the PDFs I've been collecting, I'm thinking. My description sounds a bit dry to me, but Rapido Serial is really pretty to look at. It imports all the shiny logos and it puts them down on the left sidebar for the applications we've already entered, and the buttons are lively and colorful too. Rapido Serial also makes it delightfully easy to enter all this boring information in one place. Finally. I also tested out the export button. It creates a simple and yet slightly jumbled looking text file with all of the information you've entered about your applications. The print feature might also be nice if you want to keep a pretty loose-leaf binder of your application registration information. It prints the currently viewed application onto a single sheet, complete with its shiny logos. Well, I've turned over a new leaf, I tell you. I promise I'll be keeping my serial numbers all in one place from now on, and that place is Rapido Serial. You can bet I'll be heading over to App for Mac to see what else they've dreamed up. I hear they have all sorts of Rapido products to enjoy. Well, I have great news this week about the Wall Street Journal. Now, this particular news, you might think I would look at it as bad news, but I do see it as good news. Rupert Murdoch recently bought the Wall Street Journal, which has a lot of people nervous for a lot of reasons, but he just announced that he plans on making the online version of the journal free. Isn't that awesome? Sure, it means I'm going to sell fewer online subscriptions, but it does mean that when I find a cool article in the paper version, I don't have to cut it out, photocopy it, put it in snail mail, or worse yet, scan it to send it to somebody. I wouldn't give up the paper version for the online version for anything. Something about sitting down in one of the cushy chairs at Starbucks on a Friday morning with a technology journal from Thursday, it's just too inviting. I just love reading it. I'm not sure why, but for me, it's way more fun than reading things online. If you'd like to subscribe to The Wall Street Journal, click that ad on podfeet.com, and that'll help support the show. Well, I've got a special guest today. Jesse Hernandez is a blind Mac user who's going to help us learn a little bit about the advances Apple may or may not have made in screen reading for the blind with the new Voices in Leopard. Hey, Jesse, how you doing?
Pretty good. And yourself?
Oh, I'm doing real good. I'm excited to finally talk to you. We've talked about doing this for quite a while, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
So I wanted to start out and understand, what do you use your Mac to do? What do you do with it? Do you play with it? Do you work with it? What's your use for it?
Well, I use it for a lot of stuff. I use it for both personal use and a little bit of work use as well. Also some audio, little bit of audio production here and there.
Okay. Well,
use
now
it almost for everything.
Just like most of us, huh? So mm-hmm. Did you start on a PC and then migrate over to the Mac?
Yes, I did. I've been using PCs and then I decided to migrate over to the Mac.
How long ago did you do that?
Well, in June of this year, June, July.
Oh, okay. So you're a pretty new switcher.
Mm-hmm.
So describe to me, I guess, first switching from Windows to the Mac, what your experience is with, you use a screen reader full-time, correct?
Yes.
So talk to me about the difference jumping from Windows to the Mac and how that worked for you.
Well, technically, the differences were not very different because when I was with Windows, especially with Windows XP, the only difference that I had to accustom myself to was the different commands dealing with, because I used to use something called JAWS for Windows, which is a screen reader for the Windows platform.
Right.
And when I came into VoiceOver, the command structure, I found it a little bit daunting at first, where I had to press two keys in order to invoke what they call the VoiceOver command.
Okay, right.
But it wasn't that difficult for me to switch because since I was already used to a GUI, and plus I had some help in switching over from many friends of mine, including my sister, who she was the one that basically got me hooked on the Mac to start with.
It's always those relatives that get you going.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Now, I'm kind of surprised to hear, I mean, JAWS is a really expensive program for Windows, right?
Yes, it is. It's about the standard version. It was like about $1,000.
Oh, my gosh.
And professional, which covers everything from Windows XP Home all the way to Windows Vista Professional or whatever, the Ultimate Edition. I believe it's about $1,600, $1,700.
Wow. But you're not using any secondary tools on the Mac. You're just using the built-in VoiceOver?
No, just built-in VoiceOver. Oh, and also a Braille display.
Oh, okay. So, okay, I see.
Sometimes I use that, but so mainly I use VoiceOver.
So was there an advantage for you when switching over to Leopard? Did that the new voices or anything help you out there?
Well, the new voices helped me out. The new, I don't know if you've been reading lately, but it has now navigating through elements, which means that I can navigate by headings. I can navigate by, headings, links, items.
So you don't have to read a whole page, for example? You can jump around more easily?
Yeah, you can jump around easily, especially if the page is done right. You can navigate, you know, via headings. If there are a bunch of articles and they're in headings. It's just a faster way of navigating the web page.
I didn't know that had changed. That's pretty cool. How about the voice, Alex? Do you like that a little better than the nasty ones in Tiger?
I like it a lot, especially for reading. But unbeknownst to everyone, I still go back to using Fred. As a matter of fact, when I have to when I'm just like skimming like over the interface itself,
uh-huh.
And I want, you know, speed, I'll use because the responsiveness of the other voices is really quick.
Oh, because he's probably not using as much processing power to just blurt it out, I guess.
Yeah, and interesting. But they've done a lot of stuff, especially with the intonation. You can set the intonation to sound a little bit more like a natural person instead of like, hello, this is Alex. You know, you can be like, hello, this is Alex speaking.
Interesting. I never would have suspected you use the older voices, but I guess I can see if you just want the content out, you're not trying to get inflection when you want to hear the menu picks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's when I use the older voices. As a matter of fact, I encourage a lot of sighted people and as well as blind people, if there are anybody listening. One thing I like about the Mac, it just works out of the box. No screen reader, no nothing. You just go to it, hit Command F5, and you're up and running.
I guess that really says something for, would make a Mac a lot cheaper for you.
Oh, yes, it does. As a matter of fact, I remember, and I told a friend of mine this story, just so that you can see how flexible Macs are. I went to an Apple store this week because a relative of mine was getting themselves an iPhone. So I'm like, okay, you know what? You want to activate the iPhone, go activate it. I'll go use one of the computers. So I just went, I walked to one of the empty computers, and I hit Command F5, and I was already surfing the web.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. I for some reason, I just figured it must not be as good as JAWS, that it's got to have a lot less capability since it's free.
Believe it or not, that's what I thought too in Tiger until I started really looking at it, and I was like, whoa, wait a second. This is just like JAWS, even though it's in its infancy. It's, I hate to tell you this, but it'll give JAWS a run for its money.
That's pretty neat.
Where it's going, it'll give JAWS a run for its money, a lot.
Wow, that's really a big shock. I thought you'd be telling me that, well, you know, it kind of sort of works, does a little bit of what I need, but I really have to keep going back to the PC. But sounds like you've gone.
No. I mean, there's still some minor applications that I would have to go on the PC for, but majorly I go on my Mac, and if I ever have to use Windows for something, I'm considering just installing Windows on the Mac and running it that way, and I can switch between the two of them at will.
Yeah, that's a great feature. Hey, a couple of weeks ago, I gave out the idea of using mobile websites for people using screen readers, that it might be a little easier. Did you get a chance to check that out?
As a matter of fact, I did, and they're really good, especially the only problem is, Allison, is finding the particular URL to these websites, because you go to a website, and unless if they specify, oh, you can go to our mobile site by clicking on this link and blah, 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 you're not going to find it. Now, I came across a website, and I don't know what website was this, that it detected that I had a screen reader, and this happened to me in Windows. Oh. And it said, oh, we detect you have a screen reader. Please go to our mobile website by clicking here.
Oh, neat. That's great.
Okay.
You know, I think that may be one of the reasons they don't announce it on a lot of sites. If you navigate using a mobile device to some websites, it automatically flips you over to the mobile version. Like there's a mobile Facebook. And if I go to that on my iPhone, it goes directly to the mobile version. So, but if you're on a Mac, it's not going to know that you've got a screen reader running.
No, unless if they specifically code, and I don't know how these people did this, but I guess they were checking for something, or
they detected JAWS, evidently, huh?
I don't know what it is, but I remember, as a matter of fact, even some software does this. I remember one time I went to install a version of AIM, and it even said, hey, you're running a screen reader. This is in a very early beta stage, so we recommend you do not install. And I'm like, okay.
That's dangerous.
Say, but I'm the type of person, like I was telling you, I'm the type of person that I like taking risks. I like babbling in the terminal, and I like basically getting into some really awkward messes.
You're my kind of listener, definitely. Well, hey, this is a dangerous question to ask live, but I suppose I can edit it out if I don't like the answer. What changes do I need to make to podfeet.com to make it more accessible?
Well, from what I've seen, nothing.
Whew, good answer, Jesse.
Everything is linked up. Everything is alt text. I could understand when it comes to the pictures because, I mean, you're not going to sit there and tag a bunch of pictures.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the rest of the website, from what I can see, it's accessible. I can navigate through the fields.
Well, let's see. Well, what's your favorite podcast? I mean, of course, other than my show.
Oh, I have a lot of them. I'm a big Disney fan.
Oh,
so I have
okay.
a lot of Disney podcasts, like the Let's Talk About Disney podcast. I mean, Inside the Magic, Window to the Magic with Paul Berry, which is it's really good because his podcast and this goes into another little topic that I like, which is audio. All of his podcasts are in binaural audio. So you put on a pair of headphones and it's like if you were in the park with this guy.
Oh, neat. He's doing a what do they call those, sound seeing tour kind of thing?
Oh, yes. I mean, he has a lot of them up on his podcast. I mean, you can get it in iTunes. You just search for A Window to the Magic. And he has a lot of stuff. He also sells DVDs that he's created.
That sounds
really
pretty
good. But I love a lot of podcasts, and I love yours as well, trust me.
Well, you've been a loyal listener for a long time.
Yes, well, I have.
You know what? I think I'm going to have to cut us off there, but I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today, Jesse.
Sure. You're welcome. Anytime.
All right. Keep up the good tips for me, too.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Well, I really enjoyed talking to Jesse. That was some interesting stuff I learned about how well Leopard works for the visually impaired. I really thought he was going to come back and say, this thing's junk. It can't do what JAWS can do. So that was pretty interesting. Well, Bart sent us in an update on the Leopard firewall with the new 10.5.1 update. And he also gives us a discussion on the menu bar applications that he can't live without. The full article is available on his blog at bartbuchatz.ie/blog. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hi folks, this is Bart from bartbuchatz.ie back again on the NoCillaCast. Before I get started into my reviews and stuff for this week, I just want to give a little update on some of the things I was talking about last week. I mentioned that the new Leopard firewall wasn't all that great and had three sort of fundamental flaws to it. Well, in the meantime, 10.5.1 has come out, and one of the things Apple have addressed is the firewall. They haven't solved all three of the problems, but they have solved two of them, so two out of three ain't bad. So what they haven't solved is the firewall is still not on by default. What they have fixed is that applications which don't have digital signatures no longer cause trouble when used with the firewall, which is good, so it means Skype problems are over for those who are having them. And they've also fixed the labelling of the option which they had labelled as block all incoming connections, and it now says block all but essential services. And that new name reflects what it actually does, so well done Apple, that's cleared things up a little bit. Still some features could do with being added to the firewall, but at least it's now clear exactly what it's doing. Okay, so what do I want to talk about this week? Well, you know, when you make a clean start, like I did when Leopard came, it's a good time to sort of take stock of what applications you have and haven't bothered to reinstall on your new system. And at this stage, since it's been a few weeks since Leopard, I can safely say that everything that is installed on my Mac at the moment is something which I use regularly and is therefore an important application for me. Now, it would be highly boring if I were to go through my entire applications folder and list all the applications I've installed, because trust me, it's a lot. So instead, I thought I'd concentrate on the most visible applications of all on your Mac, those in your menu bar. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start on the right side of my menu bar, simply make my way back across and just discuss what's there, what way I've chosen to set it up, and why. Okay, so without further ado, let's get going. First thing in everyone's menu bar, mainly because you have absolutely no choice, is the little magnifying glass for Spotlight. Now, even if I could remove this, I wouldn't, because on Leopard, Spotlight has become absolutely fantastic. It's fast, it's snappy, it's accurate, it's basically what Spotlight should have been all along, and what it had promised to be in Tiger but never quite lived up to. The other thing to note is that it's now an excellent application launcher, so I use it all the time instead of my once beloved Namely. So, the next thing on my menu bar is my name, but it's there for a reason. It's there because I've activated fast user switching. Now, this is something you have to go deep down into the options in your users panel in your system preferences application to actually set up. But basically, it allows multiple people to be logged into your Mac at the same time, and then you can simply switch over and back between the two desktops. This is really handy if you ever share your Mac with other people in your family. If you're the only person ever using your Mac, it's really going to be quite pointless to you, and it takes up quite a bit of room in the menu bar, but does if you have a long surname like mine. So it's perhaps not for everyone, but I find it very useful. Next thing, we have the date, which we have no choice in really. Battery status, which we again have no choice in really. Volume, we again have no choice in really. Then I choose to keep my airport status in the menu bar because I like to keep it turned off, actually, unless I absolutely need it, because I'm hyper paranoid about security, particularly wireless security. Next to that is Bluetooth, which I also like to keep in my menu bar for exact the same reason. I keep it turned off all the time unless I really need to use it. Then we finally come to a third-party app of interest. This is a free app by the good people at Rogue Amoeba, and it's one that, to be honest with you, I've only found very recently, and had I not found it on Rogue Amoeba, I was actually tempted to write it myself because it's something I missed so much. Very straightforward app. It's called Sound Source. It gives you a drop-down menu where you can simply choose which of your sound sources are your input, your output, and where your system sounds go. It also gives you easy access to your sound preferences and your audio media setup. And that's really all it does. It just adds that little menu to the menu bar, but God, is it ever useful. Especially if you're the kind of person like me who regularly records pieces for podcasts and so forth. I'm always switching between whether I'm using my speakers or my headphones or whatever for output or for input, etc. So I'm always switching them around, and it used to be very awkward to have to open up the system pref all the time. Now I have a menu right in my menu bar. Dead happy with it. Next, we come to another recent addition to my menu bar. Alison has been a huge fan of menu meters for as long as I've known Alison. She's always singing its praises, and it's quite a useful application. I've never installed it because I always thought it looked terrible. I don't know why, but I think it's a personal thing, it's a taste thing, but I've always hated the way menu meters display stuff. I think it just looks amateurish and cluttered. But as I say, you know, it's a purely matter of taste, and you know, I'm very much in the minority on this one. The vast majority of Mac users absolutely love menu meters, and you see it on so many Macs. Anyway, I never liked it, and therefore I never installed it, but I've now found something similar but subtly different enough that I do like it, and it's called iStat Menus, and it's from the good people at iSlayer who make iStat Nano, which is a dashboard widget I just would be lost without. Fundamentally, iStat Menus aims to do exactly the same thing as menu meters, show you current system information in your menu bar. But I find that it does it in a more subtle way, and for me personally, I'm only interested in two bits of information being in my menu bar. I like to keep tabs on the temperature of the CPU in my MacBook Pro, because being an early generation MacBook Pro, it does get a little prone to getting overheated, and I like to know just how hot it's getting. If it gets above 80-odd degrees, I like to shut down whatever I'm doing and let it cool down for a bit. It doesn't happen very often, but being a paranoid person I am, I like to keep a watch on it. Then what I have next to that is my current bandwidth in and out. And I like to know that while I'm downloading stuff, I like to know how quick it's really coming in, and I like to know what my machine's doing on the network, and I also like to see it on 0 and 0 unless I'm actually expecting to be doing something. Because if it's not on 0-0 while I'm not doing anything, then something on my system is doing something behind my back, and I'm particularly not fond of that. Now, menu meters draws little graphs and stuff in your menu bar. I don't have iStat menu set up to draw little graphs or anything. However, when you click on the little icons, you get extra information. So when I click on the current temperature, I get to see not just the temperature in my main CPU, but I get to see the temperature in the heat sinks, temperature in the enclosure bottom, memory controller temperature, and also the temperature of my hard disk, which is very useful. And if I click on the menu network traffic thing, I get to see my current IP address, I get to see my total bandwidth in, total bandwidth out, peak bandwidth in, peak bandwidth out. I get to see a little graph, and I get a quick link to the network utility and the network preferences, which is dead useful. Moving on, the next two things in my menu bar are again Mac OS X built-in things. The first one is the spaces icon. I'd almost never use it to actually change from one space to another, but I do find that very handy for actually just simply showing me what space I'm in. In case you're curious, I move to one space to another almost entirely with keyboard shortcuts. Okay, next one over is the iSync icon. I use iSync to keep all my Macs synchronized through .Mac. So I keep my calendars, my contacts, my bookmarks, I keep them all synchronized across all my Macs. Because, well, it's bloody awkward not having a contact when you're on a different machine, isn't it? I like to know when my machines are syncing and when not, mainly just to keep myself assured that .mac is actually still working, because it is a rather annoying service at times. Its reliability is low. So I like to see the little circle spin around from time to time, just so I know it's still doing what it should be doing. Next icon over is one of my absolute favourites. It's called Caffeine. It has one very straightforward purpose. It stops your Mac going to sleep. Basically, it has an icon which is three little Zs. If you click on it, it becomes three Zs with a cross over it. That means your Mac won't go to sleep. Click on it again, it just becomes three Zs. It means your Mac can go to sleep if the power saving is set up that way. This is great when you're using applications like QuickTime and stuff to watch movies, which QuickTime doesn't send out a signal to the computer not to go to sleep. So if you're trying to watch a QuickTime movie, particularly on a laptop while it's running on battery, it's really awkward when the screen dims or the thing bloody well goes to sleep while you're halfway through watching your video. So you just simply click on Caffeine, then watch your video, and all is well. I find it really handy. Or if I'm, you know, let's say I'm using my machine to run iTunes while I'm working on something else, I like the screen to stay up so I can see what the current album is. I just click on Caffeine, stops the machine going to sleep, all is well. Finally, the last icon over is one called Teleport. It's a fantastic piece of free software. Basically, it's the same thing as Synergy, which I know Alison has talked about in the past, and I think I've talked about, I've certainly blogged about. I don't know if I've ever talked about Teleport on the Nosillacast, but I know I've blogged about it. It's basically Synergy, the OS X way. It just has a fantastically intuitive and simple GUI, simple setup. It also does encryption of your traffic through your network, so if you're using it in work, people can't be sniffing and getting your keystrokes and stuff. And simply put, it allows me to use one keyboard and mouse with two computers. Okay, well that's it for now. That's a quick scan through what's in my menu bar. So, until next time, happy computing.
Well, when I was listening to Bart's review and he was making fun of my favorite menu bar apps, I was ready to write a rebuttal here and tell you why he's just all wet. But then I decided I should maybe I should download the latest version of iStat Menu so that I could accurately say how it's nowhere near as cool as Menu Meters. Well, I guess I hadn't run an update on iStat Menu in a pretty long time, and you know what? It does look really nice. I put it up, and the main thing I like it for is for the processor speed, right? That's a big thing I like to look at, not processor speed, but the load on the processors, because I like to keep an eye on what's going on with them and figure out why is my machine suddenly getting up to 8,000 degrees, and usually it's because there's some flash on some stupid website or something causing it. Well, I put it up, and it looks really nice in iStat Menu, and iStat Menu gives me the temperatures as well. I did notice one interesting thing, though. Menu Meters and iStat Menu must either measure CPU usage differently, or one of them maybe has a lag over the other, because they don't show the same usage numbers at the same time. Menu Meters seems to consistently show higher usage than iStat Menu. I put a screenshot in the show notes so you could see what I'm talking about. Took a shot when they were both measuring it at the same time. Anyway, I hate to admit that Bart's right. It just really irks me, but thanks for the review, Bart. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today. I sure learned a lot. Thanks again for all the excellent comments on iTunes and the feedback you've been sending in email. I just love to get your letters. I don't get anything done all week. I just goof around writing to you guys. Well, keep it up by emailing me at Allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.